Next. Baruch Hashem. It's a great pleasure to have Rabbi Savolovsky speak on the Halacha L'maaseh for Yom HaKippurim. Shkoyach Rav Kahn, thank you very much. Gmach Sima Toiva and a Git Yor.
So we're waiting for Simcha, then we will lose her. Self-defeating.
Is it on? Is the mic on? Or? It's not on. Is it supposed to be on? I was asked to try to summarize in a little bit less than an hour all of Hilchos Yom HaKippurim. So if they would have asked me to summarize Maseches Yuma, it wouldn't have been so bad because the first seven prachim were not Nogea L'maaseh. But the Hilchos Yom HaKippurim, so we'll try to do it best as we can. But the issue is when you discuss Hilchos Yom HaKippurim, so you have to spend a significant amount talking about Erev Yom Kippur because there are so many halachas that govern the day that we're already beginning. So we'll try to spend a little bit of time about Erev Yom HaKippurim and then move on to Hilchos Yom Kippur itself. One of the very first dinim that we have to discuss concerning Erev Yom HaKippurim is a Gemara that appears in Maseches Rosh Hashanah and Daf Tesem and Aleph. The Gemara darshins from the pasuk that petishal achodesh ba'erev me'erev ad erev. So there's a big problem with the pasuk. The pasuk describes Yom Kippur as being on the 9th day of Tishrei, which of course we know is not the case. The Torah says many times over that Yom Kippur is on the 10th day of Tishrei. So what is the meaning of the phrase petishal achodesh ba'erev? So the Gemara has several interpretations for this. So one of them is that this pasuk is not referring to fasting on the 9th day of Tishrei, but rather actually eating on the 9th day of Tishrei. And the Gemara says from here we derive that if a person eats and drinks tzoichel v'shoisa on the 9th day of Tishrei, so malav akosu kilu isana, that a person receives schar as if he fasted as well. So there's a special mitzvah, according to many opinions, it's actually a mitzvah min haTorah derived from a pasuk, that there's a mitzvah min haTorah to be involved in a chilu shti on the 9th day of Tishrei. There is a question of the poskim, when exactly that mitzvah begins. Does it begin only in the morning of the 9th day of Tishrei? Does it already begin tonight? Nafkamin Ladina, how much you should be munching and eating and drinking tonight? According to some poskim, there's already a mitzvah at that point. According to many others, the Gra included, the mitzvah technically only begins tomorrow. Even though we most probably poskim that the mitzvah of eating doesn't really apply tonight, we may have a little bit of karas hatoiv for those shitas that hold that it does, because that may be the source for why many of us, most of us, definitely here, the meaning is to say a very short slichas on the Erev Yom Kippur. The reason why we say a short slichas is because it's considered to be a little bit of a yontif, even though slichas in the olden days, or in quite the way it's really supposed to be done even today, is said by Ashmaras HaBoiker, it's said before Alos HaShachar, before Nates, whatever the original time, whatever the official time of the beginning of slichas is, even though it's not technically the day of Erev Yom Kippur itself, since it's already said in the night of Erev Yom Kippur, it's already considered to be a shtikl yomtiv, a shtikl zman of achil and shti, and therefore it would be inappropriate to say long slichos. Now, where that minhag Yisrael exists in most communities, as a throwback to that sheet, that the mitzvah of simcha, the mitzvah of achil and shti, already begins a little bit tonight. What exactly does that mean, that one is supposed to be involved in achil and shti on Erev Yom Kippur? So the Mechas Chinuch has a chiddush where he suggests that the shir of Achila on Erev Yom Kippur is patterned after the shir Achila on Yom Kippur itself. Most dinim of Achila in the Torah are dependent upon Kezayas, say the mitzvah of Achila's matzah is a Kezayas, or to be Chayek Koros feeding Chametz and Pesach, the shir is a Kezayas. But Yom Kippur is different because the Torah doesn't formulate the Isra of Yom Kippur, the Lashon Achila, uses the Lashon of Inui, of afflicting oneself. So therefore the Gemara tells us we have a Messiah, we have a tradition that the shear of Achila, in order to be Chayav Karas and Yom Kippur, is more than a Kezayis, is the size of a Keseves, Agas, the size of a large date. So Mechas Chinuch suggests that maybe that's the shear of Achila and Erev Yom Kippur as well. So if a person just eats a Kezayis tomorrow, and doesn't eat a Keseves, Agas, maybe he's not yet to a mitzvah. So you have to be machpit, eat a big breakfast tomorrow, a little bit more than just a regular Kezayis. How often does a person have to eat on Erev Yom Kippur in order to fulfill this mitzvah? So the Pashas Advarim is that one time you eat a little bit. That's good enough. So there is, of course, the famous tradition from Reb Chaim. Reb Chaim seemed to have been of the opinion that this is an ongoing mitzvah. One should try to be involved in this mitzvah as much as one can. So it's said over that Reb Chaim used to suck a candy on Erev Yom Kippur throughout the course of the day. That he would constantly be involved in Achilu Shtir. So I told that to my kids tonight. I saw there were some candies on the table tonight. So I said, oh, I'm going to follow this chumrah now. So I wanted the candy. So I told them, if you put together a couple of chumras that the mitzvah starts at night and you follow Reb Chaim's story, so it was already a heter to treat yourself to an extra candy tonight. But I'll call upon him. Yeah, the Pashas Advarim and the other Poskim is not that way. That as long as one is eating something and Erev Yom Kippur, one would fulfill this mitzvah. In addition to this mitzvah of eating on Erev Yom Kippur, there is a general question about this mitzvah, namely, is this mitzvah really an independent mitzvah? There are really two different mitzvahs. There's a mitzvah of eating on Erev Yom Kippur, and then there's a mitzvah of not eating on Yom Kippur. Or should I say it's almost like a package deal, that part of the reason, part of the lumdus as to why one is supposed to be eating on Erev Yom Kippur is supposed to be almost like a form of achana for Yom Kippur. If that would be true, that the two mitzvahs are really two sides of the same coin, so then the halacha l'cheri should be that one who is not planning on fasting on Yom Kippur would not be obligated to eat on Erev Yom Kippur. So let's say, for example, a person is a chayla sheyesh b'sakana, they know that they're going to be sick. They already know that they're not allowed to fast on Yom Kippur. So according to some poskim, they would not be obligated to eat. There's no mitzvah for them to be marbe v'yachil on Erev Yom Kippur, because the whole mitzvah of marbe v'yachil on Erev Yom Kippur is only as a hechsher, only as a achana for the mitzvah of fasting. And other poskim disagree. Other poskim say no, that it's an independent mitzvah. They have nothing to do with each other. There's one mitzvah to eat on Erev Yom Kippur, one mitzvah to eat on one is to refrain from eating on Yom Kippur. The two mitzvahs don't necessarily have anything to do with each other. The poskim quote that on Motzoy Yom Kippur there's also an inyan to eat. It's a different type of an inyan. That's an inyan of baskal. Since the baskal comes out on Motzoy Yom Kippur and announces that everybody got a mechilas avoinos, so then you're supposed to celebrate that by having a suda. So that mitzvah of eating on Matzoy, that's not a mitzvah deraisa, that's just a mitzvah of simcha, celebrating the mechilas avoinos, that luchar has nothing to do with whether the person fasted or not. Let's say a person is a chodesh yesh b'sakana, and he follows the halacha properly, and he eats in Yom Kippur, even if he has to eat fully, regularly, let's say, for argument's sake, the doctor says he has to eat mamash, a full regular amount of food, so he still experiences the mechilas avoinos, so maybe he doesn't have to eat on Erev Yom Kippur, but he would still be rekud l'chuyim to eat on Matzoy Yom Kippur. Remember, I told that to my father, Vashalma, last Yom Kippurs, so when he wasn't allowed to fast anymore, so maybe he wasn't required to eat an Erev Yom Kippur, but Motzei Yom Kippur, he was the same as everybody else, because the Mechilas Avinus happens to everybody. That happens whether you're fulfilling the din of Tainus or not. But a kopan, I'm going back to the story of Erev Yom Kippur, whether or not there's a mitzvah for the Chelesh Yesh Pesachona to eat on Erev Yom Kippur, so that will depend on what the nature of this mitzvah is all about. There are other dinim that also govern Erev Yom Kippur. There is an age-old practice that doesn't appear in the Gemara about going to the mikvah on Erev Yom Kippur. The Rishayim quote this already from the days of the Gaonim, such a practice we know for sure existed, to go to the mikvah on Erev Yom Kippur. And it's a big question where exactly this comes from. What exactly are we trying to accomplish by going to the mikvah on Erev Yom Kippur? To make this even more complicated, that the Rosh in Masechet Yuma quotes from Rav Sadia Gaon, that one is supposed to recite a bracha when one goes to the mikvah on Erev Yom Kippur. We don't have that practice, and in Shulchan Aruch we say not to recite a bracha, but apparently in the days of the Gaonim, some of the Gaonim were of the opinion that one actually recites a bracha. This bracha hasn't been recited for about 1,000 years, except by one of my kids. One of my kids, a couple of years ago, when they were just turned by mitzvah, so they went to the mikvah with me and Erev Yom Kippur, and there's a big sign in the mikvah, has the nusach of the bracha in the mikvah. So they thought that when you go to the mikvah, Erev Yom Kippur is supposed to make a bracha. So they told me when they came out that they made a bracha in the mikvah. I said they were the first one since Rav Sadia Gaon to make that bracha. So I'm in Shulchan Aruch and Paskin that you don't recite that bracha. Why should you even dream of making a bracha? Why? Where would this chiyuv come from? What kind of a din is this to go to the mikvah? So the Rosh is working hard in Masechet Yuma to try to figure out what the source for going to the mikvah in Erev Yom Kippur is. So he claims that maybe the source for this practice of going to the mikvah is nothing to do with Yom Kippur. Maybe it has to do with, it's like any other Yontif, because the Gemara says in Rosh Hashanah, Chayv Adam Litar Atzme Biregel, that a person is obligated to betar themselves before Yontif. So maybe Rav Sadia Gaon's opinion was that when you go to the mikvah Erev Rosh Hashanah and Erev Pesach, Erev Shavuos and Erev Sukkos, whenever you go to the mikvah Erev Yontif, you should recite a bracha, because of that din, learned that from Sukkim, Chayv Adam Litar Atzme Biregel. So the Rosh says that's not a bad pshat, but then the Rosh backs out and he says, no, he doesn't think that's the emes. Why is it not the emes? So the Rosh says, because he doesn't think that mitzvah would apply bizman hazeh, because we don't become tar anyway. A guy goes to the mikvah, he's not really tar when he comes out of the mikvah, he's still tummy tumas mace, and he's efer paraduma, we don't have that anymore. So the Rush says we can't fulfill that mitzvah anymore. So to make a bracha on that mitzvah, b'zman hazeh, even to insist to go to the mikvah, b'zman hazeh, erev yontif, you want to go to the mikvah, it's a nice thing to do, but to say that that's a real chiyav, al tzchayv, al mataratz, b'beregel, so the Rush doesn't believe that that applies to b'zman hazeh. Parenthetically, other Rishonim would hold that it would make no sense to say Chayav Adam B'Taratz B'Beregel B'Zman HaZeh for other reasons. The Rambam writes that the reason why you have to become Tor before Yontif is in order to go to El Regel, to eat Karbonos. So none of that applies to B'Zman HaZeh. Kavachayim Rishonim Yom Kippur, that for sure doesn't apply. No one's mechuyif to go to the Beis HaMikdash. You want to visit the Beis HaMikdash for Rishonim Yom Kippur, that's a nice thing to do also, but you're not mechuyif to do that. No one's eating Karbonos on Yom Kippur. So the whole idea of being B'Taratz B'Beregel, to say that's the source for our practice of going to the mikvah and Erev Yom Kippur is very, very questionable. The Rush didn't think it was right because b'zman hazeh the whole thing doesn't apply because we never become Torah anyway. The Rambam would say the whole thing doesn't apply, we don't have a base of mikdash. And others would say it never applied even b'zman hamikdash, it never applied to Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur. So what is the source? If it's not based on Chayav Adam L'Tavos V'Regel, what is it based on? So many Acharedim say that it's based on a totally different story. It's based on the Gemara in Maseches Brachos, where the Gemara tells us that Ezra made a takana that a balkari, if a man becomes tamid with tumas zera, tumas shechazera, so he's not permitted to learn, not permitted to daven, not permitted to make brachas. And the Gemara tells us that din derabbana was instituted in the days of Ezra, and by the days of Rabbi Yehuda ben Beseir, already the tanoim were mevatel that takana. What right did they have to be mevatel that takana? So the Gemara explains it was very hard to keep, it was leading to all kind of different mechsholim, so they did away with that whole din. That's why b'zman hazeh, we don't really follow that din anymore. So the Rishonim were very bothered. What do you mean they did away with the din? We have a rule that when a Beis Din makes a takana, so ein Beis Din achi yochel levatel, el kim gol v'chachu v'minyin, a later Beis Din cannot just cancel a previous Beis Din's takana unless they are greater than the first Beis Din. So as great as Rabbi Meseir and his colleagues were, they weren't on par with Ezra, so how could they be mevatel the takana? So Taisus writes that whenever you have a gezeira, takana shel poshta b'rov Yisrael, if it was never really accepted by Klal Yisrael, so then a later Beis Din has a right to revoke it, even without being a greater b'chachma of a minyan. So Taisus claims that from the days of Ezra to the days of Rabbi Meseir, it never really caught on. Most people never really followed it anyway, and by the time the Tanoim came around in Rabbi Meseir's days, they realized the whole thing wasn't working anyway, no one was doing it, not enough people were doing it, and it was leading to different problems, so therefore they just did away with the takana. So some Achmanim write that idea that the whole takanas Ezra was batal b'zman hazeh, that's based on the fact that people weren't really able to keep it. So it could be that whenever you have a takana that's this batla, it could be this batla l'chatzoin. There's a concept in halacha that the takana is partially batal but partially kayemis. Let's say Klal Yisrael would vote on the takana and say, listen, we can't keep it 353 days a year, but one day a year we could do it. One day a year it's not so hard to keep takanas Ezra. But one day a year was Yom Kippur. So it could be that Klal Yisrael accepted the takana of Ezra one day out of the year. So now it comes out that one day of the year when Klal Yisrael makabel the takana is binding, the takana is a real din. It's not just a minute to go to the mikvah, it's a real halacha. It's no worse than in the days of Ezra himself. The takana of Ezra is still in full force for at least one day a year. So that's what many achronim write. That would be the defense of Rav Sadia going to perhaps recite a bracha even on this takana. Marshal Madhavadoimah, that you can have a takana that was instituted and then it was cancelled, but it was never fully cancelled because Klal Yisrael decided to keep it partially. So some folks can say that's the same story of Pas Akum. Maybe we should have said this at the beginning of Aseret Metshuva, but the 2 days left to Aseret Metshuva, but Yom Kippur, hopefully it's not going to be relevant to Pas Akum issue. But for tomorrow, those who want to eat Pas Akum, so the Shechrar quotes an age old practice to not to partake of Pas Akum during Aseret Metshuva. Why is that? Because the Gemara explains that the Mishnah tells us in Avodah Zarah that there was a takana made that you're not allowed to eat bread that was baked by a goy, no different than you're not allowed to eat food that was cooked by a goy. But in the later years, they realized that it was very, very difficult to keep this, so therefore, based on the Rishalmi, and then a little bit after the Rishalmi, so the Rishalmi quote, that the later generations, they were basically mevatel Pas Akum. Why? What right did they have to mevatel it? So, because it was never really pashtur b'chol Yisrael, in the same way that Takanas Ezra was never fully pashtur b'rov Yisrael. So some suggest that it was never pashtur b'rov Yisrael most of the year, but 10 days a year, Klal Yisrael were able to stand up. 10 days a year, they were able to live a little bit of a higher standard, and they were able to observe Pas Akum in the fullest sense of the word, not to rely on any kulas, any kunsim, and professional bakers, paspal, to all the different kulas that we rely on the rest of the year. Aseres Beitshuva, they were a little bit more machmer on themselves. So once they were accepted upon themselves to observe the Takana 10 days a year, it was never nisbatla for those 10 days a year. So now, according to these Acharonim, Pas Akum, drawing Aseres Beitshuva is not a minig, not a midas chasidus, it's a real din. It's part of the original Takana Satanoim that Pas Akum is mamash treif. It's treif drawing Aseres Beitshuva. It's kosher the rest of the year, because the Klaiyos will never accept it the rest of the year. The 10 days a year they accepted it really is Kayemet. That's not a big Kiddush. A lot of people don't say that. But within those Acharonim who say that idea that Pasachim during Aseres Mitzvah is Mamash Adin, so that's the same type of idea that we're saying according to Rav Sadigo, what Tefillah and Erev Yom Kippur is. That really we should be Toivel all the time. Whenever a person becomes a Balkari, he should be Toivel. That's the original Takanas Ezra. But we don't have the Koyach to do that anymore. It became too difficult. So Klai Yisrael basically abolished the Takana. The later Beis and abolished the Takana. But they kept it intact for one day a year. So that one day of year, Itaka is Kayemis. So in Shulchan Aruch, we don't really pass it like this because we don't recite a bracha on Erev Yom Kippur. A person goes to the mikveh tomorrow does not recite a bracha. According to Rav Sadigo, you would have to make a bracha on the Maisa. That's not really our practice. So we assume that the going to the mikveh on Erev Yom Kippur is not really, at least misafik, is not a real halacha. So what's it based on? Maybe it's based on tshuva and tara and other kinds of considerations. The Rosh Hashulchan writes, he thinks it's based on a pasuk chumash, lifnei sham t'taru. Now, lifnei sham t'taru doesn't just mean tara min haveiros, but tara means literally, there's a special mitzvah to become tar for Yom Kippur. The Maase the Gemara doesn't have that. So again, it's an old minhag to go to the mikveh of Yom Kippur. It should be observed, but even though some Rishonim, some Gaonim thought it was a real halacha, many seem to say that it's probably only b'taras minhag, and that's probably why we don't recite a bracha. But a whole part of it's a minhag that one really should try to observe it all possible. The poskim makel that the Meikir Adin, the standard of a mikveh that can be used for Erev Yom Kippur, doesn't have to be an absolutely kosher mikveh for the purposes of what we consider a mikveh for tefillah for women. Even a mikveh that's based on mayim shuvim, that's water that's just collected in pipes and kalim and vessels. So even though such a mikveh would not be acceptable for tefillah for women, would not be acceptable for tefillahs kalim, for tefillahs geirim, but for tefillahs ezra, so mayim shuvim would be acceptable. So that's why there are some who use certain mikvahs, which are something's called men's mikvahs. Men's mikvahs are sometimes kosher mikvahs and sometimes not. You have to always know. Sometimes people make a mistake and they bring their kalim to a men's mikvah. That could be a big problem because some of the men's mikvahs around are not really kosher mikvahs. They're just basically almost giant bathtubs, big holes in the ground with a lot of water that came out through the pipes. So those mikvahs would not be good for any time that the halacha actually requires a tefillah mikvah. It would be good for tefillah ezra, but they wouldn't be good for more than that. There are several other halachas that govern Erev Yom Kippur. The Gemara tells us that we recite when we daven mincha tomorrow, so we already begin to say vidui. We really shouldn't be saying vidui tomorrow. The real vidui should be saved for Yom Kippur itself. Why exactly do we rush to say the vidui in Erev Yom Kippur? So the Gemara says that we're afraid something may happen during the Suda tomorrow, so it will be a terrible thing if a person made it all the way to Elul, all the way to Rosh Hashanah, all the way to Aseres Metshuva, then Chalila, he doesn't make it to Yom Kippur, he didn't have a chance to be Mizvadah properly, so therefore we mocked him the vidui a little bit, and we say a regular full-fledged vidui tomorrow at Mincha. After Mincha, so then of course we have the Suda with the Suda. And the Suda, one has to be careful to finish the Suda, obviously, well enough to be Yod Yom. But not only does a person have to be careful to finish eating and finish everything, because obviously you don't want to go into Yom Kippur proper, but this touches on another mitzvah, which is a mitzvah min HaTorah, called Tosefes Yom Kippurim. From that same pasuk that we mentioned before about the mitzvah of eating on Erev Yom Kippur, so the Gemara in Rosh Hashanah Daf Tes darshins another din that mikan shemosifin michol lakodesh, because the Torah says b'tisha lakodesh be'erev, start to observe Yom Kippur on the ninth day. It's not true. It's already the ninth day. We're not fasting. We're not refraining from halacha today. So obviously the Torah only means on the tenth day, as it says many times in Chumash. Yom Kippur is on the tenth day. So b'tisha lakodesh be'erev, the Teshuvah Pe explains this means that even though it's not really the tenth day yet, it's still the ninth day. The sun hasn't even set yet, you should already start the Ina, you should already start to observe Yom Kippur, you'd be Yod Yom. So this is a mitzvah min HaTorah called Tosefes Yom Kippurim. There is a big machlekes in the Rishonim about this mitzvah of Tosefes, just what exactly this mitzvah is, when this mitzvah applies, when it doesn't apply. So the Gemara Maseches Rosh Hashanah quotes this mitzvah of Tosefes not just concerning Yom Kippur, but concerning all Shabbosos and all Yom Tovim as well. Every Shabbos and every Yom Tov, you have to begin early, you have to refrain from halacha before Shabbos and Yom Tov actually begin. And the Rambam doesn't quote the din that way. The Rambam only quotes the din of Tosefes, Yom Kippurim, only concerning Yom Kippur. He doesn't mention it explicitly by Shabbos and Yom Tov. And even by Yom Kippur, he doesn't mention it in the fullest sense of the word. He only mentions it vis-a-vis Inui. He doesn't even mention it vis-a-vis Malachas. So that's a big machlokes Rishonim. So the Gaon has a whole interpretation of why the Rambam veered away from that Gemara Maseches Rosh Hashanah. The Rambam held it as a machlokes of sugyas, and the Rambam passed it like another sugya, Maseches Shabbos. But whatever the case is, the Rambam doesn't seem to mention, at least explicitly, doesn't mention the mitzvah of Tosefos by regular Shabbos and Yom Tov. But other Rishonim do quote it, and therefore the Shulchan Aruch and Hilchos Shabbos quotes it as a Yeshon, but Hilchos Shabbos he presents it as a machlokes. But in Hilchos Yom Kippur, it's l'kulei alma. Everybody agrees that there's a real bona fide mitzvah in the Torah to start Yom Kippur early tomorrow, either according to the Rambam, at least vis-a-vis the Inui, or according to the other Rishonim, even vis-a-vis the Malachas as well. What exactly does that mean that a person has to start Yom Kippur early? What does he have to do to start Yom Kippur early? So that's a further machlokes. That's a question, does he need a formal Kabbalah Sayom? He has to actually makabel upon himself the Tosefos, or just the fact that he stopped eating and he finished doing malacha and he's standing in shul and he's saying to people that he's davening already, so that's already considered to be enough of a Kabbalah Sayom. So that's a machlekes of us. Can we try the chachila to be machmer on that? It's a one time a year mitzvah for sure. Every Erev Shabbos, Erev Yom Tov is a question, but Erev Yom Kippur is for sure a mitzvah, so it's really appropriate tomorrow for a person to make a formal Kabbalah Sayyam. That's why saying Tefillah Zakah helps out a lot, because if you say Tefillah Zakah, so assuming that you get to that part of Tefillah Zakah before Shkia, so if you get to the part about being Makabal Kedusha Sayyam, so then you're okay. If for whatever reason you don't have enough time to say the whole Tefillah Zakah, so you should say part of it. So part of it, there's a little bit of a vidui in Tefillah Zakah that's important to say for other reasons. And then the Kabbalah Sayyom, once you try to make some kind of a formal Kabbalah Sayyom. The truth is, once you try to really do that every Friday afternoon, because according to many poskim, there's a mitzvah d'oraisa of Tosefos Shabbos every Friday, and according to many poskim, that mitzvah requires a formal Kabbalah. So really the right thing to do is for a person to be Makabal Shabbos every Friday afternoon, a little bit maybe El Yom, a little bit before Rosh Kia. Tosefos has to begin before Ben Hashmashos, whatever you think Ben Hashmashos is. So those who follow the opinion of the Vilna Gaon, probably most of us here, to some degree follow the view of the Gra, that already at Shkia, it's already a Safik Yom, Safik Laila, so Tosefos has to precede that. So it would be important for a person, both in Erev Yom Kippur, as well as every other Friday and every Yom Tov, to be makabel upon themselves, Kedushas Hayom, a little bit before Shkia. Some shuls don't make time for that, because if you daven mincha very, very late, and mincha is leading into Shkia already, so it's kind of hard to do that. So those who want to fulfill this mitzvah before Shkia, and they want to perform a Tosefos with Dibur, either they can daven early mincha, or when they finish their own Salon Shmoneh Esrei, hopefully their Salon Shmoneh Esrei finished before Shkia. So that's what I always try to do. As soon as I finish my Shmoneh Esrei on Friday afternoon, so I immediately say, I'm makabel by myself, Kedusha Sayom, and that's that way one can fulfill this mitzvah properly. There are some opinions that say you need a longer Kabbalah. It's not clear how long the Kabbalah has to be. We shouldn't feel bad that we're not sure how long the Tosefos has to be, because Tosefos themselves write they're not sure how long it has to be. Tosefos writes there's some kind of a shear of it, but it's not clear how much the shear is. So there are different opinions how long it has to be. So some are machmer up to a half hour it has to be, and others are mamekel that it's significantly less than that. So maybe at least a few minutes for Shkia, once you try to be careful, both in Erev Yom Kippur as well as in every Shabbos and Yom Tov, to try to make some kind of a formal Kabbalah if they're able to. Moving out of the realm of Erev Yom Kippur into Yom Kippur itself, so what are some of the basic halachas? We're all familiar with the basics of them, but just try to flesh out a little bit some of the details of these halachas. So of course, there's an Issa Malacha in Yom Kippur. The Issa Malacha in Yom Kippur has a lot to talk about. Well, we're not going to talk about it now. We learned Maseches Shabbos. We spent the whole year talking about it. So basically, the standards of Malacha and Shabbos and Yom Kippur are identical. The Mishnah Maseches Megillah, Ein Bein Shabbos and Yom Kippurim. Maybe very, very, very small nuances of possible differences, but they're almost pretty much insignificant for us. Basically, whatever you're not allowed to do on Shabbos, obviously you're not allowed to do on Yom Kippur as well, vis-a-vis Malacha. But of course, the unique Isurim of Yom Kippur, so we've spent a little bit of time talking about them. So of course, the first and foremost is the Isur Achil and the Isur Shtia. So the Gemara tells us that this is the most chomer of all the Isurim. This is for sure Isurim Deraisa. The Torah says, V'nisim Esdash HaSeichem. So the Torah Shemapa explains to us what that means is that refers specifically to Inui. That refers to the Inui of Achila Ushtia, first and foremost. So eating and drinking anything on Yom Kippur, that would of course be an Isur Min HaTorah, which carries with it an Onesh of Kares. How much eating and drinking carries with it an onus of kareis? So the Mishnah tells us that, we mentioned before, only if you eat a certain amount. If you eat the amount of a kesef sagasa, the size of a large date, or if a person drinks my lugma, they fill up a whole cheek full of a liquid, so that constitutes enough for chilushtiya to be chayev kares. Does that mean that less than that is mutter? So the Gemara says, no, less than that is also aser, but there's machlekes or biyech and mishlokesh, but the less than that is an issa diraisa, or less than that is only an issa dirabanan. So we pass in like Rabbi Yechanan, chatzishir is also min haTorah. Rashi is quick to point out, chatzishir doesn't mean 50%. Chatzishir means any small amount. Even if a person takes a mash, a little bit of food, a little bit of drink in Yom Kippur, so that's clearly, we pass, and that's an absolute issa min haTorah. The chi of karis, the ownership of karis, only kicks in at the point of much more than that. Ma'i nafkamin ladina, practically speaking, so a person's not going to eat anyway, so ma'i nafkamina for most of us, whether it's an issa karis or not. So there is a klal in Hilchos Pikuach Nefesh that whenever we have to do something for Bikuach Nefesh, so we try to minimize the Yisr if at all possible. So here too, the Pashtus Nalach is that, let's say you have a Chol who has to eat on Yom Kippur, assuming that it's a Bikuach Nefesh. If it's not Bikuach Nefesh, then he's not allowed to eat anything. A lot of people have a big misconception about that. A lot of people think that if I'm eating Pachas B'Kashir, so as long as I'm eating Pachas B'Kashir, it's not so terrible. So that's absolutely not correct. Eating Pachas B'Kashir is an Issa Min HaTorah, and the Pashas HaDvarim is that to be Matre, an Issa Min HaTorah, so you have to be a real Chalash Yesh B'Sakona. The difference between Pachas B'Kashir and Ashir means if you have a head to eat, if you're included in the head to B'Kuch Nefesh, so then we try, if it's medically feasible, if it's medically doable, we try to give you pachos mikashia rather than giving a shia shalom. If it's not medically doable, doctors say that it's not healthy to do that. Doctors say the person is a chashash sakon if he eats less than the shia, that he has to eat the shia shalom. But if the doctors say that it's okay for a person to eat pachos mikashia, then we would try to do that. So that's most of the time today. Most of the people who are eating today on Yom Kippur, so most people who have to break their fast for medical reasons is usually drinking. Usually most people, some people have other medical conditions also, but Ruba the people who are breaking the fast on Yom Kippur for legitimate medical reasons, it's usually drinking. There's always certain fears of dehydration, people who have certain weaknesses, illnesses, etc. So those people who, again, if it's been established that they're a chalash yesh b'sakana, potential chalash, even a safi chalash yesh b'sakana, so they would be permitted to drink in Yom Kippur, we would try, l'chadchila, if we're able to medically, we would try to give them what's called pachas b'kashia. There is a big machlekes haposkim, what exactly the parameters of this statement are, that which we aim to give less than a shiur, is that always true, or are there limitations even on that? So just a simple reading, if you just read the Shulchan Aruch without anything else, and read the classic poskim, you will get the impression that any kind of a chalish yesh b'sakana, again, as long as medically it's feasible to do it, so then we should try to give him pachas mikashir. So there is a famous psak from Reb Chaim, that Mr. Rav quotes in his sefer from the Rambam, a famous tradition from Reb Chaim. Reb Chaim held that this din that you're supposed to give pachas b'gashir, if it's possible, that's only talking about a person who is not quite yet a chalash yesh b'sakana. That means he has a certain type of a predisposition to becoming a chalash yesh b'sakana. The doctors tell us we're afraid that if we don't let him eat or drink now, he's going to quite possibly become a chalash yesh b'sakana. So under those circumstances, you have to give him pachas b'gashir. But if the person is already a chalash yesh b'sakana, so then the din is that you're allowed to give him even a shir shalom. You're not mechuyev to start to play games to give him pachas b'kashir. What's that based on? So the Brisker Rav says that the psak of his father was based on the sheet of the Magid Mishnah. The Magid Mishnah of Shabbos is a very big chiddush. The Magid Mishnah says that when you have someone who's already a chiddush yesh b'sakana, so you're allowed to do kol tzarachav. You're allowed to take care of all his medical needs, all his physical needs, even those needs that are not necessarily pikuach nefesh proper. So let's say you have a guy who's mamish, he's laying in the hospital, he has a very, very serious condition, and the doctors say he needs treatment X, Y, and Z. And then the person's mother comes in and says he needs a bowl of soup. And the doctors say he may feel better from eating the bowl of soup, but it's not really making a break yet. He's not going to die if he doesn't have the bowl of soup. So the Magid Mishnah says you're allowed to cook him the soup on Shabbos because that's called Tzarech Yechola. Because anything that's normally Tzarech Yechola during the Yemei HaChol would be a Tzarech Yechola on Shabbos also, as long as the person is already qualified as a Chedesh Yesh B'Sakana. So Reb Chaim's Psak, the Brisker Rav claims Reb Chaim's Psak for the Chol on Yom Kippur is based on that Magid Mishnah. But just as the Magid Mishnah permitted you, if you're already a Chedesh Yesh B'Sakana, you're allowed to have called Tzrachav, even though those Tzrachav are not absolutely medically necessary, so too, the Chol who's already a Chedesh Yesh B'Sakana on Yom Kippur is allowed to is allowed to eat in a normal manner, because that's considered to be called tzarachov. On a regular Tuesday, he wouldn't be eating brachas b'gashir. So that's all considered to be part of kol tzarachi achayla. So that's a big chiddush. If that's what Reb Chaim is based on, so then we would have serious questions whether we should follow that. The Mishnah Berurah in Ilchos Shabbos doesn't think we should follow this Magid Mishnah. He claims that most of the Rishonim don't accept the Magid Mishnah. So if Reb Chaim is based on the Magid Mishnah, so then the Mishnah Berurah in Ilchos Shabbos wouldn't sanction this kula b'chlal. So there are different minhagim and different rabbanim b'zman hazeh. So some who follow this pesach from Reb Chaim, and others who don't. When you have someone who's already classified as a chelash yesh b'sekana, whether we could just be mata outright kol tzarach. I once had a interesting application of this several years ago. I had one of my tamidim and had a very, very serious surgery. It was the day before Erev Yom Kippur, and I went to visit him Erev Yom Kippur in the morning, and he asked me the following shaila. He said that he was on IV, so he wasn't eating anything anyway, but the doctors wanted him to have ice chips. So the people on IV, they're very, very, get very dry in the mouth, so the doctor wanted him to have keep some ice chips in his mouth during the course of the day, just to keep him moist, to keep him more comfortable. So he wanted to know whether that was okay or not. So we were analyzing the shaila from the vantage point that it's probably not a life or death thing to have the ice chips. The ice chips were just to make him a little bit more comfortable. So I said to him, I said, listen, I said, according to the Magid Mishnah, I think it's okay, because you just had a very, very serious surgery the day before, so you're still a chedesh yesh per sakana. But this particular need of the ice chips is not really sakana per se, but on the other hand, it's tzarchi achola. So this is like the mother is coming and say, I want to cook the kid the soup. So I thought, according to Reb Chaim, the Miskerov, the Magid Mishnah, that whole mahalach, so the ice chip should be okay. But I said to him, honestly, I'm telling you, the Mishnah Berurah, I don't think we'd buy into this. The Mishnah Berurah, who didn't accept the Magid Mishnah, wouldn't accept this either. So I said, this whole discussion is assuming that the ice chips are not mamash b'kuch nefer. Nothing's going to happen. You're not going to die, Chalila, if your mouth is a little bit dry. So that was, I said to him, listen, I said, I taught me to be machriya this. I'm just telling you, these are what I think the bottom line depends upon. So the doctor apparently was very upset what I said, because the doctor said, no, it's very, very important for him to have the ice chips, and he can't play games, and da-da-da. So, I don't know, I wasn't so convinced. So I didn't want to argue with the doctor, because the doctor was an old chavrus of mine. So we had learned together several years before. So we had many machleksim over the years. This is our last of our machleksim. But after Yom Kippur, he asked a couple other doctors, and they thought I was right. So I guess, I didn't go to medical school, but I think I got this one right. But anyway, whatever it was. Okay. When we speak about feeding a chola on Yom Kippur, so we have to make sure that we're doing it properly. Again, assuming that we have the clearance, or even a suffix, even if it's only a suffix, pekuach nefesh, so we would feed the chola on Yom Kippur. So you have to make sure that you know what's considered to be a shia, what's considered to be a shia of achila, what's considered to be a shia of shtia. The din is that achila and shtia ain't mitzvah for the Gemara of the Beferish, that if you have a little bit of food, a little bit of drink, so then they don't combine together. But if you have a little bit of food and then a little bit more food, a little bit more food, then it is mitzvah together. Or a little bit drink, a little bit drink, a little drink, it is mitzvah together. How much time is the shir tziruf? So here, when it comes to foods, the Gemara tells us that we have a halacha mashm sinai, that the shir tziruf is kedechilas pras. So how long is kedechilas pras? So there are different opinions. We both give anywhere from 2 minutes to 9 minutes, somewhere in between. So according to the biggest machmirim, here it comes out to be the biggest machmirim, it would be 9 minutes. So let's say you would have a chelish yesh b'sakana, so you don't want to feed him too much food at one time. Again, assuming the doctor's okay with this, you give him a little bit of food, and then you wait 9 minutes, and you give him a little bit more, and a little more. If you spread it out over every 9 minutes, so that'll be okay. And then, what about when it comes to drinks? So when it comes to drinks, that's a big machlekes that we've shown him. Is the shiat tziruf also 9 minutes, or is the shiat tziruf much less than that? So we try to be machmir here also, that the shiat tziruf would be 9 minutes. So we would also try to spread out the drinking as well. So that's usually what we do, is when you have a chelish yesh b'sakana, so you try to give him like a little shot glass, which is usually about an ounce. So an ounce is, for most normal sized people's mouths, is less than a malugmav, it's a little bit less than a keseves. So you can give a person a little bit of food, and then give them a little drink, and then wait a few minutes, and give them a little bit of food back and forth. So just yesterday, I was talking to somebody who may have needed food and drink. So I explained to them, if you have every 5 minutes something, you won't go 5 minutes without eating or drinking something. What could possibly happen to you? So I said to them, if you listen to me, you'll be eating and drinking more than you would on a regular day. I said, it's not as long as you spread it out properly, so you don't ever have a shiat tziruf either of the food or of the drinks. Again, Rav has to try to be careful to make sure that this is done properly. My kids know that I stopped doing it the last couple of years, but we used to always buy a couple of bottles of Powerade we would keep in the back of the shul, just in case. Sometimes chalil, you have somebody who really is supposed to be drinking and is not careful, and then they start to get very woozy, so you want to give them something that'll wake them up a little bit. So we used to always keep a couple of bottles of Powerade. The reason why my kids knew it, because the deal always was that after Yom Kippur, assuming that nobody drank it, so then they always got the treat for the Powerade. So after a couple of years, my wife didn't like that minig anymore. She thinks it's very unhealthy, the Powerade, so I stopped buying it. So the last 2-3 years, the kids still ask for it, but they learned that now we switched to orange juice in the back of the shul. So if you get sick in oratory, you're not getting any more Powerade. It's only orange juice this year. Which reminds me, I have to go tomorrow. I can buy some orange juice so someone can remind me tomorrow. In addition to the Isur of Achila and Shtiyah, so there are a whole series of other Inuyim, other types of things that one has to observe on Yom Kippur. That's called the Shar Inuyim. So, of course, we're all familiar with these, not wearing the shoes, washing, anointing, relations, etc. So here the Gemara tells us that these Isurim do not carry with them an onus of kares. This is according to everybody. There's no Isur kares for them. So that's a big machlekes of Rishonim. What should we conclude from that? So some Rishonim concluded that the reason why there's no Isur kares is because they're not min haTorah. And other Rishonim said, no, the reason why there's no Isur kares is because the Gzeiras HaKosel there's no kares, but they're also asur min haTorah. So again, it's a big, somewhat unresolved machlekes of Rishonim. A person wears shoes, a person washes, does things that are Shari Nuyim, so clearly those are also in Yom Kippur. Would those be violations min haTorah? So that's somewhat questionable. What are some of the parameters, some of the important things that we should be aware of in terms of these Isurim? So let's say when we deal with the Isur of a washing, so one is not permitted to wash at all on Yom Kippur, unless one is washing if one's hands are dirty. So one's washing just to get rid of the dirt or something, so that would be okay. That's why we assume, most of the Rishonim assume, that you're allowed to wash Negelvas in the morning. We assume that that's like a spiritual kind of a dirt, like a Ruch Ra, whatever it is. So one's allowed to wash for that. The person goes to the bathroom, if their hands got dirty, so we usually assume that if you go to the bathroom, if you're in the process of going to the bathroom, if your hands get dirty, so then you're permitted to wash that off as well. Whatever, any other kinds of washing, that would be problematic. The Gemara actually tells us at the end of Maseches Yuma that Chayvei Tefillas Tovin Kedarka Yom Kippur, that a person is allowed to go to the mikvah on Yom Kippur because that's not a rechitza shel tainug. So that mikvah din should be okay. Horai, the Kohen Gadol went to the mikvah 5 times on Yom Kippur. So the Rishonim write that we don't follow this din anymore, because the only reason why they used to follow this practice of going to the mikvah on Yom Kippur is because it really made a difference. The person wanted to go to the Bisa Mikdosh, they wanted to touch the Vam Kedoshim, etc. As man is there, who cares whether the guy goes to the mikvah or not? The only nafkamina going to the mikvah is for the woman, and there's an issur of tashra shemitah anyway on Yom Kippur. So for what's the big rush to go to the mikvah? So therefore, our mikvahs are closed on Yom Kippur night. Women don't go to the mikvah on Yom Kippur night. There's no tzarech to go, so we don't observe this din of Kol Chayvei Tefillas anymore. That's what Tosfos already quotes in the end of Maseches Yuma. In addition to the issur of rechitza, there's the prohibition of sicha. One's not allowed to anoint, a shmir, any kind of creams or ointments or anything. So here also, one is not permitted to do this. According to some, would be a deraisa. According to others, would only be a derabanan. In addition to the issur of sicha, there's an issur of nilas asando. One's not allowed to wear shoes. So that's a big machlekes in the Rishonim. What exactly constitutes a shoe for these purposes? So some Rishonim hold that a shoe is defined objectively by leather. Any shoe that has leather in it is called a shoe. When there's no leather in it, then it's not called a shoe. It can be comfortable, it can be fit your foot, it can be more comfortable than your Shabbos shoes, but if it doesn't have leather, so then it's tetragoma. That's what many Rishonim hold. That's what the Shulchan Aruch quotes. And that's what probably most people follow. There are others who disagree, the Rambam disagrees, other Rishonim disagree, who say that no, that if a shoe is fairly comfortable, it's supportive of one's foot, and etc., so that's considered to be enough of a shoe to be a problem. The minhag ha'olam is to be makel, as Mishnah Berurah quotes, there are some who are machmir, the Golden Gaon was known to be machmir in this, but again, many people are makel in this. That seems to be the minhag, for the most part, to follow the view of the Shulchan Aruch, and those who show say if it doesn't have any leather in it, so then it's considered to be hefty gomor. In terms of Tashra Shemita, so not only is Tashra Shemita also, but the Shulchan Aruch quotes that the harchokos of Hilchos Nida should be observed as well, that one should be careful. Things that would normally not be done when the woman is in Nida should not be done on Yom Kippur as well, as a harchok, as a precaution against any fear of Tashra Shemita. It is because of this Issur Tashra Shemita that we have a practice that Mishnah tells us in Maseches Pesachim of lighting, of benching lech on Erev Yom Kippur. If you ask most women, what's the most important lech benching of the entire year, they would probably tell you Erev Yom Kippur. So the truth is that Chazal say the exact opposite, that the lech benching on Yom Kippur is not even a din, it's only a minute. and the Mishnah says that some places didn't even have the minhag. Where was the minhag based on? Why do you have to bench left on it? You're not having a suud anyway. Usually lighting candles is to enhance. I think Shabbos, and you can sit down, eat the suud, and no one's eating, you're keeping it anyway. So why in the world are you benching left? So the Gemara explains that the minhag was in some places that they would light candles, so we should dafka make sure that the husbands would see their wives in a way that they wouldn't want to have tashmish, because you're not allowed to be mishamish mitasal or haner. You're not allowed to have relations when there's a lit candle in the room. So once you would force yourself, you'd have a candle there, so then memelo, they wouldn't be able to be together. So that was a harchaka that many communities had as a harchaka that tashmish and mitas. So that's what our minig is today, that we do light candles in Erev Yom Kippur. Women bench lech, and they make a paracha when they light candles in Erev Yom Kippur. But the ikra adlokas neiros in Erev Yom Kippur is not really the regular adlok. It's not like the adlok of Erev Shabbos. It's really more geared towards this. Therefore, I think the more correct thing to do is, I'm not advocating people putting candles, Amish candles in the bedroom, potentially get dangerous, but I think that it makes a lot of sense that they should put a nightlight or something. And the wife bench lech tomorrow, so she should put in some kind of a nightlight, or turn on the light or something, and then, you know, put the whole light on, you won't be able to sleep. I'll put a little light there that would create the issue of tashmish lehaner, therefore would really serve this issue, would really overcome with this problem, which was the whole takana, the whole minig of lighting an Erev Yom Kippur in the first place. Of course, in addition to all the Yisurim of Yom Kippur, I shouldn't really say in addition, one of the main components of Yom Kippur, of course, that a person is supposed to be doing tshuva in Yom Kippur. The halachas are all very important. We should refrain from eating, refrain from wearing shoes, all that's true, but we have to make sure not to forget that we're supposed to be chayz v'tshuva in Yom Kippur. So there seems to be a question to be shown him just exactly what is the nature of this chov of tshuva in Yom Kippur. Is this like almost like a mitzvah sayom? Like on Rosh Hashanah, there's a mitzvah sayom to blow shofar. There's a mitzvah sayom at Sukkot to shake a lulav. So the mitzvah sayom of Yom Kippur is the finish of the Torah. It's supposed to be mitayis, it's supposed to be chayz v'tshuva, dafka on Yom Kippur. Well, maybe no. Maybe it's not so much a chov hayom. It's almost like an opportunity. That's what the Rambam seems to present in Luchos Tshuva. The Rambam writes, "It's Kates Slichel Man Slichel V'Chil Yisrael." You would be a fool not to be chayz v'tshuva on Yom Kippur. Here, the Rambam is holding out the last minute. It's the best day of the year to be chayz v'tshuva. Rambam is telling you that he's going to accept your tshuva, not to do it. That's a terrible, terrible loss of an opportunity. So, no matter how you slice it, you're supposed to be chayz v'tshuva. Whether it's an absolute formal chayv hayom or whether it's just the Svar dictates that you would have to be foolish not to do it. So obviously a person is supposed to be chayz b'tshuva as best as they can throughout the day of Yom Kippur. Since tshuva always goes hand in hand with vidoy, therefore Chazal instituted it to say vidoy multiple times during the course of the day. So we say it already Erev Yom Kippur, as we mentioned before, and we say it throughout the day, throughout each of the Shemoneh Esreis, in order to fulfill this mitzvah of chazar b'tshuva in the most proper way. There are a few things one should be careful about just in terms of Zmanim on Yom Kippur, in terms of particularly Zmani at Tefillah. One of the issues really the Rishonim raise is that sometimes sometimes Shachris could schlep out very long. So if Shachris schleps out, by the time it comes time to start Musaf, so if you already reach the time of Zman Nicha Gedola, then you're in a little bit of a pickle, because the Gemara says in the fourth Berakha Brachas, if it's already a year Zman Mincha, you're really supposed to have Mincha before you dive in Musaf. So that would be a big confusion for people in Shul. Imagine if you would finish Achris, finish laning, and then all of a sudden after Yiska, so the rabbi announces we're going to dive Mincha first, and then we'll dive Musaf later, and throw the whole world off. So some Rishonim write that din in Maseches Brachas, that you daf mincha before Musaf, because if Tadir, that's only for Yechidim. For Tzibur, you wouldn't do that. You involve all the whole Tzibur. But the post can point out that you shouldn't get yourself into that situation. You should try to plan accordingly. So the shul should plan accordingly that they finish in enough time. I mean, there is time, even if you daf in a long shachar. So it's about mincha. It's fairly late these days. So you should try to make sure that Musaf begins before the Zman Mincha actually starts. Another thing to be careful about is Zman Ne'ilah. Again, also, you have to plan accordingly. That Zman Ne'ilah, there's Machlekes Negemah, where the Ne'ilah is supposed to be said Dafka Bayom, or Dafka will be said at night. So we paskin that Ne'ilah is really Bayom. You're supposed to start Ne'ilah late in the day. So that's usually what happens. We usually start it pretty late in the day. We get at least the Sanj, but after, for sure, we get in before Shkia. And we get a good part of Chazar Seshata before Shkia, and then we finish off until Tzeis Kichavim. So the post can point out that there's one piyut that we say in Ne'ilah about Hashemesh Yovav Yifna. We speak about how the sun's about to set, so we should try to say that before Shkia. So again, assuming that Shkia means what we call Shkia, we follow those who follow the Vilna Gaon Shita, that there's only one Shkia, the sun sets one time, and that's it, that's the Halachic Shkia. So then that piyut should be said dafka before Shkia. If for whatever reason that piyut wasn't said before Shkia, so the Mishabur changed. changes the diktag on you. He says you should really say the lashon hava. You should say that the sun already set, rather than just say something that's not endless. So again, you should also try to plan accordingly to finish with enough time. In Eretz Yisrael, in those communities that Duchen and Ne'ila, so then there's a whole other challenge in terms of Zmani Hayom. So many places like the Duchen, in Eretz Yisrael, that's the many they do Duchen and Ne'ila, it becomes a very, very, very big challenge because the Pasha says you're not allowed to Duchen after it gets dark. The Babli doesn't say that explicitly, the Rishami says that you're not allowed to Duchen after dark. So if that's the case, then you have to try to duchen before Shkia. Problem is, you try to duchen before Shkia, but you can't tosh up till Tzitzke Chavim. So what are you going to do for the next X amount of time? So the answer is, those who've been in yeshiva in Israel know, it's called the very, very long Avinu Malkeinu. So that's usually what the yeshivas do. They schlep out Avinu Malkeinu for a long, long time in order to fill the gap of that time. There are some communities that do duchen after dark. They follow the tradition of the Maharil. It's against the Rishami. Apparently, the Maharil felt that we don't follow that Rishami, whatever the reason was. So there are some communities not so far from here that do a duchen after Shkia, and there were big questions about that. Even within those communities, there were some who wanted to change back and forth to how to defend that practice of duchen after Shkia. But again, for most of us, it's not relevant. Most of us would daven. We have an Ashkenazi shul, so we're not doing it anyway by the Ilan Chutz Laretz, so it's not going to be all that relevant. And when it finally comes time to the end of Yom Kippur, so there's an age-old minhag of blowing shofar. This minhag doesn't appear in the Gemara, it appears in the Gaonim. Tosfos quotes in a few different places. So in some places Tosfos tries to defend it, in other places Tosfos throws the hands up, they're not sure where it came from. So Tosfos, the simple shot is that it's a term of a throwback to Yovel. It's like a minig of the Yom Kippur, of the Tkir Shofar of Yom Kippur Shal Yovel. So Tosfos writes, if that's the case, then you should only blow it once every 50 years. Why do we blow it every year? So Tosfos is not sure that's the reason. And Tosfos writes other reasons. Maybe it's just to tell people that Yom Kippur is over. Maybe it's the Olal Kim B'sru Hashem Lecho Shofar, some of the Shechin is going back to Shemayim. A lot of other somewhat mystical reasons as to why this Tkir Shofar exists. But nice, that's the minig Yisrael, that you blow Shofar Otot right at the end of Ne'ila. And then, of course, you daven Ma'ariv. So you're supposed to daven Ma'ariv Matzah Yom Kippur. So that's Chiddush, because the Gemara quotes one possibility. Maybe you don't have to. The Gemara says that, according to the opinion that says that Ne'ila can be davened at night, supposed to be davened at night, so the Gemara says Ne'ila is for Tereshul Arvis. That I already davened. I davened the Ashman Esrei. I davened the Tefillah already at night. So Tefillah's Ne'ila can pater Ma'ariv. Doesn't mean you pater Kriyashma, doesn't mean you pater Birchus Kriyashma. It just pater Ashman Esrei. So Taisa, the Rush and Masechet Yuma points out that we don't paskin like that. We paskin that Ne'ila is really Be'od Yom, and therefore it doesn't have the ability to pater Ma'ariv. So therefore our practice is and should be that we talk a should daven, we should daven Ma'ariv and Matzim Kippur Kedasa Chadin appropriately. There is, of course, that humorous comment that sometimes people remember about why you say Vurachum on Matzah Yom Kippur. You just finished getting Mechilas Avena, so that Vurachum is ready chal for the Ma'ariv. I mean, you should ready take care of the Ma'ariv that's about to happen in 2 minutes. So, but it should be in a more serious note that Ma'ariv should be davened to Kedas Uchadin. After one finishes Ma'ariv, so then we recite Havdalah. The Havdalah is basically a Havdalah of a Matzah Yom Tif Havdalah. But it does have the Bar Mera'eshin. The Bar Mera'eshin, Matzah Yom Kippur, is for a different reason. It's not like on Friday, on Matzah Shabbos. Matzah Shabbos, the Bar Mera'eshin, is because the Ribbon Shalom gave Adam Rishon the wisdom to rub two sticks together, to rub two stones together on that first Matzah Shabbos. So to celebrate, to commemorate the creation of fire, that's why we make the Bar Mera'eshin Matzah Shabbos. And Matzah Yom Kippur, it's a whole different picture. Matzah Yom Kippur, it's to celebrate the fact that the fire was off limits for 24 hours and now we're starting over again. The fire wasn't created in Matzah Yom Kippur, but we're starting a use of fire again. So that's what the Gemara in Pesach in the fourth parak says, that on Matzah Yom Kippur you have to use what's called the Nesh HaShavas. You have to use a candle that was already around, fire that was already around. You can't just strike a match in Matzah Yom Kippur. Matzah Shabbos, you can strike a match, but Matzah Yom Kippur, you can't strike a match. You have to use a candle that already existed. That's what the minhag is. We usually have a bunch of Yotzei candles that have already been burning for quite some time. So the minhag is we make a bar Mer'esh on those candles. After Ma'ariv, so then most of us recite Kiddush Levana. Some people already recited Kiddush Levana earlier. Those who followed the Minhag of the Gra and others who wanted to chop around every last mitzvah during the Seder Mitzvah, so already said Kiddush Levana. But those who follow the other, the more universal minhag is not to recite Kiddush Levon until after Yom Kippur, because we weren't quite in the state of Simcha. So Antot, right after Ma'ariv, so we run and we recite Kiddush Levon. Then afterwards we go and after Havdalah and Kiddush Levon, whatever the different things that we did. So then we have a Suda, as we mentioned before, as the Baskel says, you're supposed to have a little bit of a Suda on Matzah Yom Kippur, and then you're supposed to start to build your Sukkah. So the Baskim quote, you're supposed to start a little bit. The bulk of the Sukkah you can build the next day, but you should start a little bit the Sukkah. Those who don't have the ability to mamish builds, not everyone has the other to build the Sukkah Matzah Yom Kippur. So it's always many, many places that have this minig, that they have a little bit of a Shia, a little bit of learning of the Sukkah. Like the Gemara says by Kavanah, that you can't bring a carbon, so the Rav Hashem accepts your learning, it's almost like you brought the carbon. So those who, for whatever reason, can't physically be involved in the building of Sukkah should learn. It's a good time. Learning is always a good thing. It's always a good time, especially after Yom Kippur. So I should open up Masech HaSukkah, open up Mishnah Berurah HaSukkah, and begin to get off on the right foot. Yom Kippur. So again, we try to give a little bit of an overview. Obviously, Yom Kippur are much, much more involved in some of the things that we touched on, but we try to give a little bit of Rosh Hashanah to be able to observe the Yom properly. So hopefully, Rav Hashem should give us a Siyat Bishmaya to do the mitzvah Sayyom properly, and to most important, to be Chayz B'tshuva properly. Marshal, I must accept the Lord's tefillahs. Wish everybody a gemach simcha.
Shkayach, and thank you, Rabbi Sevelovsky. Shkayach, Marat Simatova.
Tversky will start in 5 minutes. If that's okay, is Tversky here in the room?